involved in a miscommunication lately? Did gender differences figure into the situation? If you'd like to find out, stay tuned. I'm Diana Boer, and the show is Communicate with Confidence. Our purpose is to help you strengthen your communication skills at work and at home or wherever else you might find yourself. This is part two of our three-part series, Crosstalk Between Men and Women, and I hope it helps. As I mentioned in the last segment, we're going to focus on typical differences in communication styles between the genders, differences that can make your work environment either supportive or stifling, differences that can make a marriage either heaven or hell. We'll focus on a few more frustrating conversations and relationships, and more importantly, provide some clues to help you get through to that maybe adult son or daughter, the in-law, that colleague whose reactions just puzzle you and even keep you awake at night. Here's my thesis. Let me repeat it again for those of you who missed it in our first session on gender differences. There's not a right or wrong way to communicate. Men are not superior communicators. Women are not superior communicators. They're just different. And awareness is the key to bridging that gender gap. So let's get into one of those major differences. Solution or empathy? Which is it? This difference is probably more widely recognized than most, yet it continues to surface to cause trouble, in the workplace particularly. Let me set the scene here for you. A couple of colleagues discussing a hiring decision. The female colleague says, "I'm trying to hire an administrative assistant. I can't find anybody who's halfway literate." And our male colleague says to us, "Well, that's an exaggeration, I hope." And she says, "Well, slightly, but I am so tired of giving those screening tests. I wanted to do all the interviews in a day and then make a quick decision. We've had 8 interviews scheduled, but as it turns out, half of them I interviewed can't pass the grammar test." Our male colleague says, "Well, so give them the grammar test before you schedule the interview." And she says, but we may miss somebody that way. And the grammar test isn't everything, of course, but they do need heavy editing skills and telephone skills, initiative, organizational skills. All those are important, too." And her male colleague, wanting to help her, says, "Well, why don't you identify somebody else already on staff and just transfer them in? Sarah Ferguson, she's a crackerjack assistant." And the woman says, but just because they already work here doesn't mean they have the heavy editing and writing skills we need. It's just so frustrating. One applicant changed jobs 6 times in the past year, and the second one arrived an hour late. Can you believe being late for an interview?" And her male colleague says, "Look, why don't you give somebody else your criteria for hiring and let them do the interviewing? Surely you trust somebody else's judgment." And she says, "It's not that, but if she's going to work for me, I want to do the hiring. It's just time-consuming. It's frustrating. I've got too much to do, and I still have my budgeting and my forecasting. I can't even find time to go to the dentist." And he says, "Look, have you thought of using an employment agency?" And she says, "You're missing the point." He walks away from a conversation like that saying, "Well, evidently I am. She's got a problem, and she doesn't want it solved. I gave her at least 4 good solutions, and she didn't want to hear any of them. Obviously, she just wants to whine." Now, she walks away from that conversation thinking, "He struts around like he's God, always has the answers. No problem, he says. All you have to do is X, Y, or Z. I wish he would just listen occasionally." So why doesn't she think he's listened? And why doesn't he think she wants to solve the problem? Because they have 2 different purposes for that conversation. Often, when a woman discusses a dilemma, she wants empathy and support, not necessarily a solution. She wants to feel understood. She wants a man to show that he understands her situation, to say something like, "You're stressed," or "You're angry," or "I understand you're tired." On the other hand, when someone tells a man the problem, he thinks he's supposed to solve it, because his basic drive is to be admired. He goes all out for solutions rather than empty. "Try this, try that, try the other." All of which just adds to the woman's frustration.
It's your life. Live it to the fullest. And the Success Training Network can help you.
Now, there's equal confusion when a man mentions a problem. Because a woman wants empathy when she brings up a problem, she often offers the same. She often comes across as a not-so-subtle reminder that the man should have done this or he should have done that, and he could have avoided his problem altogether. Now, the man, on the other hand, doesn't want to know how he got in the mess. He wants to know how he can fix this particular problem. An example. A man says, he's planning a retirement luncheon, and he says, I can't get the restaurant to take reservations for that luncheon. When I tell them it's a small group, they just keep saying we're going to have to come in and take our chances on being seated together. First come, first serve. And I've already sent out the invitations. Now, the woman listening to him begins with what she would expect. That's terrible. That won't be any fun. People aren't going to enjoy sitting at different tables. You know, when I heard you mention that restaurant last week, I was afraid they didn't take reservations. That's going to be a major hassle to have to contact everybody at the last minute to change locations. Haven't you already invited a lot of the friends and family? I bet you're really embarrassed, huh? What are you going to do? Now, he's steamed. He doesn't know what he's going to do. That's why he's telling her. He wants to know if she's got some ideas to help him resolve the situation. Does she know somebody that can pull some strings at this particular restaurant? He doesn't want empathy. He doesn't want a rehash of the whole problem. He wants a solution, just like he'd give her. So, to get past this kind of impasse in a relationship, a man has to remember to show empathy, not just share a solution, to make the woman feel understood. And the woman has to make it clear that she is not necessarily looking for a solution. Or she has to recognize that a man's attempt to solve the problem is in itself an expression of empathy with her situation. You see, they're at cross purposes in such conversations. And somebody has to learn to read between the lines about what's being asked for and what's being given in that situation. Questions. How do you use them? When do you use them? How many do you use? Are they necessary and helpful? Are they intrusive and sometimes trapping? A woman came up to me after one of my programs, and she made this comment. She says, you know, my husband says to me after a party, you don't talk to people, you interview them. Women do tend to ask far more questions than men. And questions are a good way to get to know people. They build rapport. They encourage other people to talk about themselves. But men, on the other hand, often consider questions intrusive. They sometimes even suspect questions are traps to catch them in an unfavorable light about some mistake. I think it goes back maybe to our training in childhood. How many of you had this comment from a parent? Johnny, how many times have I told you don't leave the bike in the driveway? Now, does that parent really want to know how many times? No, that question is a trap for Johnny. Men sometimes hear this parental tape playing in their mind from childhood. Let me ask you, do these tidbits sound familiar? For example, the woman says, I noticed you left work early yesterday, kind of unexpectedly. I hope nothing was wrong. And he says, no. Or picture this, a trade show attendee, and she says, do you know other people here at this trade show, or are you a first-time attendee? And the man says, first time. Period. End of conversation. You see, in all these, the man thinks he's answered adequately, and the woman thinks he's being distant. Saleswomen tend to approach a male customer with lots of questions, for example, to establish a connection. And many times he's put off with that approach. So, what is the solution if you're growing impatient with a colleague, a prospect, a friend about trying to build a closer relationship? As a man, be aware that women aren't trying to pry necessarily when they ask all those questions. They see the habit as a way to show interest in you and to encourage you to talk about yourself. Women are always saying, let's connect as human beings. The information or the answer to the question itself isn't necessarily of concern. Women customers also ask a lot of questions for two reasons. First of all, if you're talking with a woman buyer, she wants to know you, and she does her homework. The questions are a test. The answers are not so important themselves, and they're not on personal issues, but they're a test to see your reaction to questions in general.
Time management is a waste of time. In the purest sense of the definition, you cannot manage a constant. You can't manage 5 minutes and get 10. You can't manage an hour and get 2. The only thing you can manage is what you do with the time you have.
That impatience to take time trying to push for a fast decision before I had my questions answered. So, what's the middle ground? As a woman, be aware that men sometimes feel that you're being pushy or that you're delaying or even that you're about to spring a trap on them with all those questions. Instead of the question routine, simply just offer information about yourself and see if the other person reciprocates. Try something like, I'm wondering if, blah, 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 or it would be helpful to know if, blah, blah, blah. Those are good conversation starters without the question routine. So, to question or not to question? That's the question. Don't let it start an argument or build a bridge in a relationship. Let's move to the next difference that you probably are aware of in your own experience, and that's the difference between help or humiliation. Picture this. These colleagues have been in a conference room poring over paperwork far too long, and the male says, this document is so poorly done, I can't make heads or tails of it. And she says, I agree. I'm embarrassed to go out and present it to the client. We chunked the boilerplate because it was so disorganized, and this one's worse. And he's still looking over the paperwork. He said, I told them I wanted 3 distinct sections in this document, and it's still not correct. And she says, well, I'm going to go call Harry. He's worked with these lawyers and these tax people before. Maybe he'll know why they structured it this way. The man's still staring at the paperwork. Harry hasn't been on our discussions. Just give me a minute. I'll figure it out. And he's thinking, if they'd done it right in the first place, we wouldn't have a problem. And she's thinking, this is so stubborn. This is so ridiculous. The whole project's taking us twice as long just because he refuses to ask anybody anything. And besides that, Harry would be flattered that I called. To ask or not ask for help, that's the question. Men tend to equate information with power and status. The person who has the information or has the answers is in a higher situation. Think about that same issue at the office. Who gets copied on certain information is important. Having inside information is a status symbol, a territorial thing. Why? You can trace this gender difference all the way back to our cultural upbringing as children. As little boys, men engage in one-upmanship and communicating. Well, my dad knows the president. Or, well, my big brother can tie that kind of knot. He learned that in Cub Scouts. Or, my Uncle Jards knows the owner of this place. He knows how to get us in free. See, to men, to have to ask for help or information, it's an act of submission, of subordination. And sometimes that's just downright humiliating. Men are in the business of gaining respect and admiration for what they know, and asking for help or information just doesn't support that goal. Now, women, on the other hand, like to feel needed themselves. We as women grow up seeking approval, getting pats on the head when we do things that are helpful. We like to give help. We like to give information, and we assume everybody else does the same. But to women, help doesn't equal power. For example, think back in your childhood. Grandma comes to stay and asks 6-year-old granddaughter, where does mommy keep the napkins? Mommy's in the hospital having baby brother. And the little 6-year-old runs off, gets the napkins. She comes back. She gets patted on the head. We get rewarded. Women see children as helpers. To a 13-year-old, a mom might turn around and say, Billy, would you get out your calculator and add these expenses up to see what you get? I can't get these expense reimbursement tickets I've got to turn in. I can't get them to balance. You see, women use children as helpers. They don't think it's a status symbol necessarily to have information or to solve a problem. There's just simply no connection. Now, women themselves like to be helpers, and they please people by helping. They consider asking questions or asking for information a reciprocal agreement, a chance to let other people feel needed and important. In fact, if I were to ask you as a woman, how many times have you asked for information when you didn't really need it, just to let someone feel important, it would almost be a unanimous response. You see, the difference in asking for or responding to help when it comes to medical issues. Ask yourself, who goes to a doctor more readily, men or women? How many of you identify with this dialogue? A man's driving along in the car and he said, "We should have passed that Del Mar exit half an hour ago." And she says, "Honey, why don't you stop and ask somebody?" He says, "I know we're going in the right direction. It's got to be up here within the next few miles." A male accountant executive routinely asks help or humiliation. That sometimes is the difference in our consulting request. You see, our primary business is doing workshops on communication training, but often we get requests from executive coaching for executive coaching from individuals. And when the individual we're working with is female, there's no pattern about who the requester might be. Sometimes the boss calls and says, "I have a regional vice president I'd like you to coach. She's really valuable to us, but there's one area she needs a little polish in." Sometimes it might be the HR director who calls for the help for that employee. Sometimes it's the female executive herself who calls. There's just no pattern in who makes that request. But at least as often as not, it's the female executive herself who is seeking opportunity for improvement and growth opportunities. In other words, she's all in it for self-improvement. Now, with a male executive client, almost exclusively, the request to us is stated like this: "My boss said I had to get some coaching before I could move to the next level." Almost always the time frame is, "Now they said I couldn't get my bonus until I get this coaching and get this checked off." You see, the call comes from women generally for themselves. When the help is needed for the man, generally someone else is called.
You want more cooperation from other people? You better use the right words. Every word matters.
You see, women love company with their misery. They like to share misfortunes. Sharing builds intimacy, it builds rapport, and they often gain advice. If not advice, at least they know others recognize and care about their problem. They even share broken fingernails, snagged hose, running mascara. I mean, man, when's the last time you ever said, "Oh, I've got a hole in my sock"? We just don't equate the same importance to supporting someone's bad problem or misfortune. Because of their need to feel respected and admired, men don't typically air those difficulties. Expressions of sympathy aren't always appreciated. Think about it. In your neighborhood, if something happens, something goes wrong, a man loses a job, their small business goes bankrupt, a son or daughter goes bad, who is it that tells that around the community or to the rest of the family? Usually, the female. Men don't mind that God is in control, but they don't want other people to be in control of their life. Not too long ago, one of my male sales reps in our organization had back surgery, major surgery. And about 2 weeks before he had scheduled the surgery, I'd joined him in Chicago to make a sales call with him. We got out of a rental car in the underground parking garage, and he attempted to heave my big catalog case out of the trunk of the car. And I watched as he winced. Oh, you know, it's back. And I said, "Look, here, let me help you." All of a sudden, he turns to me, "Don't do that." I said, "Do what?" He said, "You're stepping on my male macho." You see, even a negative situation, a physical problem, he didn't want sympathy. 2 months later, a similar conversation. We were moving into our new office building, and we had a big furniture shuffle. We were standing by a shelf, and he said, "Could I have that in my office?" And I said, "Sure, pick up the other end. I'll help you carry it over." All of a sudden, I saw the grimace again with his back. "No, no." I said, "Why don't we let somebody else move it?" He said, "Diana, I'm fine. I'm a big boy. I'll decide if my back hurts." You see, my first reaction was to be taken back at his bluntness. But then again, I became aware of that gender difference. Sympathy may feel as if people are rubbing salt in the wounds. about what's happened. Men feel they need to be in control of their lives. And when something happens that's not good, it's beyond their control. It's frustrating. And it's even more frustrating when other people notice it and they mention it and talk about it. Sympathy or solution? Don't let that create a big divide. To wrap up about these differences that I've talked about earlier, I hope you've been able to identify some of these differences as the culprit in your own past conversations. Solution versus empathy, help versus humiliation, or sympathy versus support. The drive to be liked or to be respected. All of these will certainly surface from time to time at your workplace or at home. And now you'll have a clue about how to get through. I'd like for you to join us for part three of our series for even more differences that you'll want to be aware of before they either derail your career or your social life. This is Diana Boer, encouraging you to communicate with confidence.